If you were listening to this on the day that it came out, which happens to be Friday the 19th, then know that tomorrow I will be in downtown Oklahoma City. I will be giving a CME lecture, Mind, Body, and Spirit. I'll be talking, and hopefully someone out there will be listening. If that's you that's listening, if that's you that's there, then please come up, say hi. It is always nice hearing from people that happen to listen to Question Medicine. With that, let's get on to the show. Welcome back to Question Medicine, where we are asking medical questions and giving medical answers based on recent medical literature. And today's question is physical therapy for chronic knee pain done via video conferencing or tele-rehab or telemetry rehabilitation equal to physical therapy performed face-to-face? Basically, if your patient says, hey, I have some knee pain and I want to get physical therapy, but I don't have time to travel 30 minutes to the office and then travel back. Maybe I just want to do it over my lunch hour. Could you do video conferencing? Could you do tele-rehab for chronic knee pain? And is that equal to face-to-face? You ponder that question and I'll be back in 15 seconds. Andrew Bilt, sunny St. Petersburg, Florida. Let's do this thing, shall we? Tele-rehab for chronic knee pain. Is it equal to face-to-face rehab? I have recently come across in one way or another that it appears that therapists are very sensitive to the use of tele-rehab. They think that maybe this will replace them. I'm not really sure why they're sensitive to it or why they believe that tele-rehab wouldn't work, that you need a actual four walls with a roof and a building and certain equipment to do rehabilitation, when realistically, for the most part, a majority of rehabilitation has to be done outside of the rehab center. Even if you're in a very intense rehab situation and you're getting rehab, I don't know, 3 hours a day or 4 hours a day, you are living how many more hours of your life outside of that rehab center? Rehab should give you the tools to do rehab. Rehab should give you the skills that you need, answer your questions to then be able to go home and do more rehab and do more exercises on your own. There is no way you can just get 100% better in just rehab by itself. I know many emails about that saying, well, I know that there's this one patient one time that did nothing else for the rest of life. No, we're trying to get people back on their feet. We're trying to give them the tools and tricks to go forward so they can do their own self-rehab. So it would make sense to me that tele-rehab should work. However, that's why we run the trial. And in this trial, they used 15 therapists that were trained to provide remote services, and they treated patients in both groups using uniform protocols, which is something I like because then you have the same physical therapist that's doing then hopefully the same exact thing to all the people. And one of the major complaints when you look at tele-rehab studies is that, well, look at this. Maybe the two different groups were getting different rehab, or, you know, some therapists are better than other therapists. And in this, it's the same therapist delivering what is the same protocol to hopefully the same population of people. Obviously, it is impossible to blind participants to whether they are getting telemetry rehab or tele-rehab or whether they're getting face-to-face rehab. They pretty much know which group that they are going to be randomized to. But in this study, the participants were masked to the trial hypothesis and the alternate treatment. So if you were in the study, you didn't know what they were actually trying to test. You just know that you had to come in and get physical therapy, or you just knew that you had to get tele-rehab. You had no idea what the other group was getting and what was trying to be tested here, which is, although not able to be blinded, it is probably the best way to keep people from undergoing the Hawthorne effect. And as a reminder, the Hawthorne effect takes place when someone knows they're being watched, they know they're in a trial, and then they do things probably a little differently than they would normally otherwise do it because, well, they're trying to change their behavior to fit what they think the authors or the protocol or the trialists were wanting. When in realistic terms, we just want you to do what you always did so we can see if what you always did and what we always got will always work. That's what we really want to know. A better example is this is usually colonoscopies. We know that colonoscopies should have a very slow withdrawal rate, but if you think that every person that's ever had a colonoscopy out there has a very slow withdrawal rate looking for any possible adenomas or cancer, then I gotta tell you, I got some oceanfront property in Arizona. I mean, it's just not realistically happening. Now, is it happening hopefully most of the time? Is it happening if you're symptomatic? Yeah, hopefully. But is it happening for every single screening colonoscopy that's ever done? I mean, come on. For this trial, the primary outcome was knee pain on a numerical rating, 0 to 10, and physical function, which was based on the Western Ontario McMaster University Osteoarthritis Index, also known as the WOMAC. And they were looking for change after 3 months of randomization in either the pain or the function scale. This was a non-inferiority study, which means the authors can pick the non-inferiority boundary. For example, this was based on a 0 to 10 pain score. And the authors could, they could potentially say, as long as there's no more than a 6-point difference on a 10-point scale, then the two ends or the two things that we're trying to test here are not inferior, which obviously is not accurate. But in any study where it's a non-inferiority, you have to immediately go in and try to see, well, what was their non-inferiority boundary? And for this study, the non-inferiority boundary was 0.95. 0.95 on a 10-point scale. As long as there was no more than 0.95, or basically a 1-point change on a 10-point scale, then this was considered to be non-inferior. The two treatment arms were considered to be non-inferior to each other. And for the WOMAC scale, which is up to 68, the difference was 8 points. And I just gave you that tidbit of information on non-inferiority trials for when you read a trial in the future, because in the end, it didn't really matter. At the end, at 3 months, individuals only reported a difference of 0.16, 0.16 difference in a 10-point scale of the pain scale, and only a 1.6 difference in function. Both of those were well within the non-inferiority boundary. So we can safely say whether you got tele-rehab or face-to-face for chronic knee pain, there was no difference. They were non-inferior to each other. For me, the ultimate takeaway bottom line here is, for the outcomes of pain and function, tele-rehabilitation with a physiotherapist is not inferior to in-person rehabilitation for patients with chronic knee pain. If you like this podcast, then please give it a review. But I know, I'm just like you. I don't give every podcast a review. So let's just be honest. If you like the podcast, just share it with a friend so we can all be a little bit better, one question at a time. And with that, I will end this podcast as I've ended every single one before it. Wait for the music. Until next time, Keith Quest and Questioning.